This is what should be done by one who is skilled in goodness and who knows the path of peace. Let them be able and upright, straightforward and gentle in speech, humble and not conceited, contented and easily satisfied, unburdened with duties, and frugal in their ways, peaceful and calm, and wise and skillful, not proud and demanding in nature. Let them not do the slightest thing that the wise would later reprove, wishing in gladness and in safety, may all beings be happy, whatever living beings there may be, whether they are weak or strong, omitting none, the great or the mighty, medium, short or small, the seen and the unseen, those living near and far away, those born and to be born, may all beings be happy. Let none deceive another, or despise anything in any state. Let none through anger or ill will wish harm upon another, even as a mother protects with her life her child, her only child. So with a boundless heart should one cherish all living beings, radiating kindness over the entire world, spreading upwards to the skies and downwards to the depths, outwards and unbounded, free from hatred and ill will, whether standing or walking, seated or lying down, free from drowsiness. One should sustain this recollection. This is said to be the sublime abiding, by not holding to fixed views, the pure-hearted one, having clarity of vision, being free from all sense desires, is not born again into this world.
So, how many people haven't actually meditated before?
I think it was three. Yeah, roughly three.
Okay, so I need to give a little instructions for everyone. When we're doing meditation, we usually have a meditation object, at least in this kind of meditation. And the meditation object which we look at and pay attention to, I won't say concentrate on, because Ajahn Brahm, our teacher, doesn't really like to use the word concentrate, but what we pay attention to is the breath. So while we're meditating, we watch the breath, just an ordinary breath going in and out. So just watch your breathing now, and without doing anything to it, especially those who haven't meditated before. Just look at your breathing. Your ordinary, everyday breath. This is not a class in yogic breathing, pranayama. We're not teaching any kind of breathing exercises. We're not holding our breath or doing anything like that. All we're doing is doing an ordinary, everyday, common breath and looking at it. And so what we can see in watching the breath, we can see different things, like the length of the breath, whether it's short or long. We can see the pace, whether our pace picks up, whether the length, as I said, whether the length is long now and gets shorter as it goes, or the opposite. And we can look at the pauses. We can see if the pauses are long or short, or if they get longer or shorter as we go along. There are, in other words, there are many things to look at, and none of them are right or wrong. We're just looking at the facts of our breathing. We're just looking at what happens to the body when we breathe. Okay, is everybody clear about that? This is it's simple, but it's not a easy meditation object. But it's simple in concept. We're just watching our breath. And this was the Buddha's favorite meditation object. And there's a sutta called Anapanasati Sutta in which he gives instructions in it. Now, the subject that I'm going to talk about kind of fits into this, because I'm going to talk about sati, which is mindfulness. It's called mindfulness, or present moment awareness. The Pali word is sati, S-A-T-I, and which actually means memory, or what we call mindfulness. And there's we have what's called the Noble Eightfold Path. The first step, and it goes, let's say, sila samadhi and panya, it goes virtue or morality, and then it goes to meditation, samadhi, and then it goes to wisdom, panya. Now, the second step in meditation, the meditation zone, is sati, is mindfulness. And what it gives is the mindfulness as set up in four different ways. And the first one, which we're going to consider tonight, when we're doing the breathing, watching the breathing as a meditation object, is the body. So it goes to the body, and then the second one is the feelings, but by feelings they mean sensations. And then it's the mind, what's going on in the mind. And then it's mind objects by which they are mean, the various subjects in Dhamma, like the hindrances and the Four Noble Truths and things like that. We don't have to get into any of those. And you can take them step by step, and people teach them in different ways, and they call that Vipassana meditation. Now, Vipassana and what we're doing, Samadhi, meditation, or aiming towards that, are really not that different. They're not really disconnected, but they're taught that way in the world now. They say that some people teach samadhi, just deep meditation, aiming towards jhanas, which are real deep states, and the other is vipassana, in which you're aiming at insight through observing and using as meditation objects these four different elements of your existence, which I just mentioned. The first one being the body. So, fortunately, we don't have to move past that. And in Anapanasati, the reason I mention all that is that in Anapanasati, you have actually 16 steps divided up into four. And the first four are what we're doing. And it says, well, I could read it, but anyway, the first two simply are saying what I just said more elaborately, that you watch the length of your breath, the lengths of the breaks, the pace, and that sort of all those sort of things, the things that are activities in the body, and that's what you watch purely as a kind of experimental. You know, as if you were a scientist in a lab and you were doing experiments and you were completely objective about it and had no preconceptions and you simply wanted to see how things work, right? And so that's what you're doing. Then that's, say, the first two steps of the four, and then the next one is seeing not just elements of the breath, like the length or the pace or whatever, but the whole breath. Encompassing the whole, what they call the breath body, but they mean the whole breath. I don't know how else to say it. You know, the way they use the word body is kaya, is the way we use corpus, corpse. You know, when they say the body of evidence, the corpus delicti or whatever it is, and what they mean is the body of evidence. Well, they don't mean a body. They don't mean literally a body in the sense of a physical human body. They mean body in the sense of a body. It's used different ways, and I'm sure you can think of different ways you can use that word as a group of things together that are considered as one thing, a body. a body of evidence, a body of this or that. So when they say, when they say a body here, the body of the breath, they don't mean the physical body. At least this is the interpretation that I've been taught. That what they mean is the whole breath as a unit, all the elements of it, the whole breath. So that's the third element, and then the next part of it, and these are all done at the same time. They're not things that you have to think about too much. These will happen as you get more relaxed and you overcome hindrances. The last one is that you bring a state of calm, or you, by persistent meditation, a state of calm, a calm comes over you, especially your body. The state of calm then naturally leads to the next four, which are called feeling or sensation. And the first one, I only have to mention the first one, because to me that's the goal of this class, that we do the meditation on the breath persistently, and then we come to the next one, which is piti, which means rapture. And rapture, you defined in different ways, but it's in the Visuddha Magga, which you may have heard of, it's described in, like, there are five different kinds of this rapture, and they're described as like tingling, uprushing, and different kinds. Like there's four or five different types of piti. So what I'm saying is, hopefully you'll be meditating, and you'll find this calm state. I don't want to say you'll bring this about. It isn't that you bring it about, or that you do it by your will. It's something that happens naturally if you meditate and you're persistent and you keep going. And then you'll find this great state of calm, and then you'll feel this tingling. And that's a simple way to say piti. So don't worry about it if you don't feel it. I remember being in this class when a woman, at least one woman, has said that she felt this tingling. So it is possible, and it's something that, you're not going to, if you're just starting out, you're not going to get to probably in a half hour, unless you're really, really motivated and you've done it before and so on. I mean, Ajahn Brahm, the first time he meditated, I understand, in Europe, when he was a student at Cambridge, he entered jhana. That's what everybody's trying to do. It was in his first meditation. That's why he's Ajahn Brahm, I guess. it is possible. Any questions? Questions are the most important thing. I'm sorry, I interrupted somebody. Okay, jhana is samatha. It's the meditation. It's the goal of the meditation part of the Noble Eightfold Path. You've heard of the Noble Eightfold Path? As I said, it starts out with morality, then it goes to meditation, then it goes to wisdom. The only way you get wisdom is through this kind of meditation. Through jhana, you have insight. How could I define jhana? It's a very deep state. They used to say concentration. I'm not allowed to say concentration, of stillness. It's a very, very deep state of stillness in which the senses are, they leave you, they're cut off. You don't do it. It simply happens when you get into this really deep state. This is, not so many people can do this, but this state. But when you reach that state, then you, as you come out of it, you can have insights into the true nature of reality. And those insights are what constitute wisdom. That's what jhana is, but I don't feel that I've given you a very good idea of it. But it's a little bit hard to, it's a deep and abstract term. I don't know how to say it, except that people, when they go into this state, and it is not a trance, because the thing that a trance doesn't have is mindfulness. So what we're, our subject tonight is sati, or mindfulness, or present moment awareness. That goes all the way through your meditation into the deepest kind of meditation. You always will have that present moment awareness. But what you won't have are the senses, and you won't have thinking. You won't have thoughts going through your mind. It will be a pure presence and very powerful. Is that good enough? Okay. Okay, so does anyone... you still with me, or did I... Okay. Anybody else have a question? Because those are the most important way that we can move forward if we have any kinds of difficulties. No? You sure? Well, I hope after your meditation, I hope you will have questions about how the meditation progressed, and you will see things. Typically, this will happen to everybody, and if you meditated, you know that I'm telling the truth, which is that as soon as you start paying attention to the breath, your mind will start. After a few minutes, you'll get bored. The mind will get bored and start thinking of other things. Right? This is what will happen. So every time that happens with you, you see it, your mindfulness, your sati will see that. That's one thing it does. It will see, oh, I'm off the track. I'm off my goal. My aim is to maintain, I won't say concentration, but observation of this meditation object. So you bring it back. It's like exercising. It's like doing, pumping iron or something. Doing meditation is like... every time, it's like you bring your attention back over and over again to the meditation object, and you kind of build up your meditation muscles, you know, by that exercise. This is why it's called a practice. You have to practice it, and then you get better at it, because you're familiar with what's going on, and pretty soon you'll have an awareness of your own mind and what your mind is bringing up. And you'll have done this kind of research into your own mind and what it's doing. And that also includes the body, of course. And then you'll be able to anticipate these things and overcome them more easily. But don't worry, it happens to everybody, and this is what the practice is. Constantly bringing your mind back to the meditation object. Everybody clear on that? That's what we do. That's the meditation practice. Because it's very unlikely people are going to just sit down and fall into jhana or become enlightened, right? Right, like that. This is the practice. And all of these things that interfere with this practice are what cause you problems in life. So it's not just meditation. It's your whole life is affected by these hindrances. These hindrances affect your whole life. And when you become skillful at dealing with them in meditation, you'll become skillful at dealing with them in life, in ordinary life, daily waking, working, and so on. So that's one of the benefits. So I would say to start with, you want to address the body itself. And we're going to meditate for a half hour. And it's about 7:30, so, and we want to address the body and sit up straight. It's always best, probably, for people to sit on the floor in a meditative position, somehow crossing your legs, but not so that it causes pain. But if you have to sit in a chair, or tonight you can sit in a chair, sit straight up and keep your spines as straight as possible, and keeping the lower back tucked in a little bit, the natural curve. And don't slouch like I'm slouching here. You can't see me. Don't let your shoulders pull forward and go like this, because that will induce sleepiness and tiredness. You can always look and monitor your body and make sure you're sitting up straight. And keep your neck straight and your head balanced right on, straight on top, as if you were balancing a ball, or as if you were a seal balancing a ball on its nose. You know, you keep your head up straight, and this will induce in you much more awareness. You know, alertness and awareness. And try to go back to that. Now you can always start your meditation with relaxation. We don't have a lot of time to address that tonight, but you can, if you want to, you can imagine relaxation in different ways, whatever way you know, by going to different areas and relaxing, or you can imagine a plane going down from the top of your head, slowly pushing the tension out, going down, pushing all the tension out of your face, and I'm going very fast on this, but your neck and your shoulders. A lot of tension builds up in people's shoulders and their neck, and just have all that tension pushed out through the fingers, and then continue the plane going down through the torso, releasing the tension that builds up in people's stomachs, in your stomach area, the abdomen, going down the through the hips and down the upper and then the lower legs, and all that tension, just release all that tension and let it flow out through the soles of the feet. And if you have to stop during your meditation and you feel that you're getting tense, just go ahead and feel free to relax in whatever way you want to, or find whatever is tense and consciously relax it. That's fine. And it's all part of it. So now we're breathing already, and we want to watch our breath. So continue to watch your breathing, and you can look at the things that I mentioned before. The length of the breath, the pace of the breath, the pauses after the inhale, the pause after the exhale, the feeling possibly of the breath as it goes in and out of your nose. You may be able to feel the breath on your upper lip. Some people can, some people can't. Whatever physical feelings you have or become aware of, just direct your attention to those. And keep your sati, your present mindful, your present moment awareness, your mindfulness, keep that clear and alert. So if thoughts crop up in your mind, just see them, see this is happening, and return to the breathing. You may have a long breath, and then you may have a short breath. If you find that you are forcing the breath or trying to manipulate it, just let that go. It's very common to do that without really noticing it. But when you see that you're trying to do something to the breath, or make it longer, or push your abdomen out, just let those go. Just see that you're doing it and letting it go. Let the breathing become natural. No tension, let all the tension go, and just breathe normally. See if you can feel the breath going in and out in the nose. And you may also notice that the chest naturally goes in and out as your lungs inflate and deflate. If you hear sounds or have feelings in the body like pains, or if you feel other things like the air, which is very cool, like a little breeze on your neck or some part of your skin, just take note of those. See those things and then return to the breath. If the pain is very bad, you may have to change your position, but ordinarily we try to just look at the pain and just let it go and return to the breathing without changing our posture. If you're thinking about other things, return to the breathing. Watch your posture, don't slump. Don't let your chin go forward, pulling your neck forward. Just keep it all straight, up in a straight line with your spine. You can feel the quality of the breath. The breath is pure life that's coming into your body, filling you with life and going out. It's like filled with energy, this breath. It's not just gases. It's actually a kind of energy that you pull into your body by naturally breathing. and it brings life into your body. It's a pure, natural breath that we're never aware of. We always breathe unconsciously. So this is conscious breathing. Breathing with awareness in the present moment. Feel how pure that breath is. If you're thinking of other things, scenarios, or scenes where you're talking to people and they're talking to you and having arguments or plans, whatever it is, just let that drop. Let any thoughts of the past drop, any thoughts of the future, let them go. Any regrets, let them go. Any worries about the future, just this is not the time. Tell your mind you can worry later. You can go home and worry all night long. But right now, for this half hour of meditation, you let all those things go, all those concerns. You just drop them. And you turn to the breathing. Keep your back straight. Keep your posture straight. If you feel sleepy, you can stand up and do standing meditation. You know, the peace that you've attained through your meditation so far. And if you do not feel peace, what is the reason? What are the preoccupations in your mind? And see them and let them go, and return to the breath as your meditation object. Some part of your body is more present to you, like your hands or your feet or some other part, and you seem to feel it more. It's not pain, it's just that you feel it more. You can look at that and let that go. If you're beginning to get sleepy and nodding, one thing you can do is rub your face and do this all quietly. You can squeeze your ears. Feel the sweetness of the breath, a cool, clear breathing, cool, clear air that you're breathing. Filled with life-giving energy. Let your relaxation intensify, deepen, so that you're calmer, more relaxed. Just let that go deeper and deeper with the breath, following the breath. Let your present moment awareness follow each breath in the present moment. You can only breathe in the present. you hear a noise, and you look at it briefly and return to the breathing. Feel the precious energy flowing in with every breath, energizing you, bringing you life. All coming in on the breath. Maybe you'll feel a tingling in your chest area. If you see that you desire something that's a hindrance, a thirst for something, a taste, or whatever sensual delight, see that, return to the breathing. That is a hindrance. If you see that you have a certain ill will towards something or someone, or to this meditation, see that. See what that ill will is. See the results of that negativity, that ill will. That is the second most powerful hindrance. Desire and ill will. If they occur to you, let them go. Just see them. Take note, let them go. If you become tired, drowsy, that's a hindrance, the next hindrance, drowsiness, sleepiness. And then the next one is restlessness. Restlessness and worry, the mind moving from one thing to another. See if that's happening and move back to the breath. All these hindrances become clearer when you're meditating and you have an object, which is the breath in this case, to look at. That's your aim. And the last hindrance is doubt, skeptical doubt. Am I doing the right thing? But the most important two are desire and ill will. If you're drifting off from the breath, return. See what you drift, what is causing you to drift off, and return to the natural breath. Feel the purity of that air coming into your body, that purity of energy that gives life. In these last few minutes, feel that life flowing into you with each breath, without comment, without words, just breath alone in the present moment. One breath after another. In the present moment. Now in these last few minutes, I want to do a little metta, meditation, loving kindness. And I'll just say these words, and then if you wish, you can continue saying them in your own mind, and I'll stop talking. May I be happy. May all beings be happy. May I be happy. May all beings be happy. May I be happy. May all beings be happy. And you can continue watching your breathing as you say these words. The end of the half hour, and we can turn the lights on and be careful to adjust to the light. Don't shock your system. Open your eyes slowly, get used to the light going on. I think the light goes on very slowly anyway. And just remember, may I be happy, may all beings be happy. And as we come back to our usual waking state, we can think about any things that may have occurred to us while we were meditating, any questions that we might have that might clarify the meditation. Question. In general, did you feel that the coaching, my comments, guidance, was that beneficial to you?
Yes?
Yes. Generally, yes. Any no's? Any no's? Was there too much guidance or too little? I can't imagine there's too little. Too much, maybe. Well, I just like to check in once in a while, make sure it helps. Does anyone have a question about their meditation, any aspect of it, about the meditation object?
Last week, they were talking about...
Could you pass that to her? I don't hear very well. You have to either speak very loudly or use the mic.
Last week they were talking about you can reach a point in your meditation where you get a little jolt, and it's not falling asleep, but it's something else. And just wondered if you sort of knew what that was.
That was Buddha Rakata?
Yes.
Yeah.
I'll have to ask him what he's talking about. I don't know exactly what he means.
Okay.
So I can't really help you on that. Different things happen to different people. Different people have different reactions, but as you relax, it's probably natural that you could have a jolt. I've had jolts in the past as I was going to sleep. I was not trying to meditate, I was going to sleep. And certain things release. You know, you've probably felt that yourself. And it is a kind of jolt sometimes. I don't know if that's what he means, if it's due to relaxation or something more mental, so I'll have to ask him. I don't know.
Alright, thank you.
The best I can do.
Could I ask a question?
Yeah, just hand it. Good.
I asked this question last week, and
I still can't. Yeah, closer.
Can
you're better.
Yes. I asked the same sort of a question last week, but that was with my breathing. Like, I was breathing, and all of a sudden I went like this. And he told me that it's deep relaxation.
Deeper relaxation? That it was deeper relaxation?
Yeah.
Uh-huh. That sounds right. Yeah. Thank you. So you're answering her question.
Yes.
Okay, fine. All right, that's good. That kind of fits in with what I was thinking, that it must be. I can barely hear myself sometime when I talk. So I have to insist, either that or write your questions down on a piece of paper, but then I don't think we'd get to them tonight. Any questions? Yes.
Are there instances of open-eyed meditation?
Well, I've heard that some Zen practitioners, and this is in other countries, Japan or Korea, sit facing a wall with their eyes open. I don't think any Theravada monks do that. I could be wrong. There is one kind of meditation where you have your eyes open, and that's using a colored circle called a kasina. You know what I'm talking about?
Yes.
Oh. All right. Well, you have to have your eyes open to do that. But that's a very particular kind of, I would have to say, advanced meditation. I wouldn't probably recommend it to beginners. The reason you do that is that there are certain colors, and this was not something that I remember that the Buddha ever recommended or taught. I won't say that he didn't recommend it, but he didn't teach it except... Anyway, now in the Visuddhimagga, you'll see it explained very clearly, and there are certain colored discs, and what you do is you gain a certain kind of inner vision of that color that you can see in your mind very clearly. And what happens is that by using that you can go into jhana. But this is a rather advanced mode of meditation. And I actually don't know anybody who teaches it. Ajahn Brahm doesn't. I mean, you can try it, but I would say concentrate on the breathing for a while. You know, don't jump into these esoteric kinds of... is that the kind of meditation you were talking about when you said open eye?
Similar. I was talking about it in general. I've experienced open eye meditation accidentally.
Accidentally?
Yeah. Just focusing on my light.
No, I was afraid you were going to say a candle.
No. Just like a twinkling on the water.
Uh-huh.
Yeah. Or a dewdrop on a leaf.
And what kind of state did that bring into you?
Awareness, but not connected to myself, is the best way I could describe it.
all I can say, I'm not, that's fine. I just want to, since I mentioned a candle, I want to caution you that meditating, what they call meditation sometimes on a candlelight, does not bring about a state of awareness and mindfulness. It brings a trance. It brings you into a trance, and it's an occult practice. I don't recommend that. This is not occultism.
No. So what are the sensations of a trance? Or lack of sensations of trance?
Well, you don't have mindfulness. You're just sort of like concentrating on one thing totally without any kind of awareness.
Right, okay. Well,
that's the best
what I experienced.
Okay, good.
Yeah.
All right. If there are no other questions, I'm going to start a talk. This is a talk I started a few months ago, but I only got, because there were so many questions, I only got part of it done. So, and I felt that it was important. So, all right. If you have questions about what I'm talking about, it's all right to interrupt. And I'm sorry that I'm going to be reading, but I couldn't memorize this all. And I didn't feel I could do it extemporaneously, so. He's already bored. I'll see you later. Okay.
He does homework.
Hmm?
He does homework.
Homework, oh. Okay. Anyway, this is about sati. I said the mindfulness or sati was the subject because I consider it the most important, probably the most important thing about this class to learn is about present moment awareness. That's why I keep mentioning it, and I mentioned it through the whole meditation and before the meditation. So I'll just start on this and try to get through it, and hopefully this would help you in your meditation. And if you don't understand what I'm saying, just ask me to explain it. Okay, mindfulness or sati is a pre-symbolic activity. It's going to be hard for me to do this with a mic. Pre-symbolic activity. You know, usually when we're thinking in words, right? This is symbolic activity. This is a certain kind of mindset that we have when we're doing things and reasoning and reading and thinking, and that's all symbolic activity. And what I'm saying is mindfulness as sati is pre-symbolic. It's pre-verbal awareness. And it's kind of similar to comparing peripheral vision, which is sort of general and not specific, and it doesn't abstract anything out of what you're seeing, to focused seeing on one object. Focused vision. Sati or mindfulness occurs before the perception and before objectifying a thing and making it a concept. That's what we do. We look at something, and because we've been trained this way, we make it an object. We objectify it and we take it out of its surroundings and we turn it into a word finally. We turn it into a thing, an object. And so then we consider other people objects, and we consider ourselves that. Whereas what we're trying to do is instill sati, present moment awareness of just what is, okay? So there's another analogy, kind of similar, if you're used to photography and zoom lenses. If you pull back and you have a short lens, you get a wide angle with a lot of depth of field. It has a lot of depth in it, and it's the whole field that you're looking at, and it's very three-dimensional. I mean, it's a two-dimensional picture maybe, but it has a three-dimensional quality in itself. Now, if you pull, I think you push forward on a zoom lens to make the focal length long, and then you have a long lens. A long lens is a telephoto lens where you have gone to one head, say. You've gone to one thing, and you've abstracted that from the surroundings. That's like our verbal mind just seeing one thing. And you've abstracted that, and you do what I just got through talking about, which is that you turn it into an object, and you've lost... Another thing it does, oddly enough, is that it flattens. It takes away the three-dimensional quality of the picture, and it flattens it out. And I've seen this because I studied it. So mindfulness sees reality in depth, while thinking in concepts takes things out of their natural environment, out of the flow of time, and turns reality into words and concepts. It's an abstracting process. That's what we're trying not to do. And that's why words are inimical to our meditation. And so we could concentrate on different objects of meditation. It wouldn't have to be the breath, but we use we need an object to aim at, to focus on, so that we can see what the rest of the mind is doing when we slip off. When we slip off our aim, we can see that, and sati brings us back and says, because part of sati means memory. It knows what the aim is, and it says you've gone off the track, and you better get back on the track. It's like the little cowherd with the cows in front of him, and he has a long stick, and the cows go along the path, and there's corn in one side and wheat on the other, and sometimes they reach their neck over and they start eating the corn, and he taps them with the stick on one side, and he has to tap them on this. On the other side, and that's what mindfulness does. It sees you going from one thing, maybe to the from the past on one thing, to the future on the other side, and it sees that and brings you back to the breath, which is right down the middle of the path. Okay, so mindfulness is very fleeting. You may have noticed that. You know, in the Buddha's instructions for meditation, he says, you go to a tree, sit under a tree, and you sit down and cross your legs, and then you establish mindfulness before you. He tells you to establish mindfulness. Now, that would indicate that mindfulness isn't always present with us, right? He wouldn't have to give us an instruction. So he says, and when he says this is very important, when he says you establish mindfulness before you, it doesn't mean, like some interpretations have been, that he means physically in front of you, like your nose. And the teachers that I've had say that it doesn't mean that. It means simply what we say when something is in front of you, it's the most important thing, right? That's the primary thing that you're concerned with. That's what's in front of you. That's what's before you, right? Would everyone agree with that? Okay. All right. So, now, it's a little hard to define mindfulness in words, and it's something you have to experience. And hopefully everybody did, to some degree or another. There are different qualities that I'm going to go through. The first one is unbiased observation. Something like a mirror reflecting what is in front of it. So your mind has become like a mirror, and it just reflects without any words, without liking or disliking, without any kind of without any judging or preconceptions. Sort of like a scientist observing an experiment without preconceptions of what it is. He may have some certain expectations, but not... Well, there's a little difference in preconceptions and expectations, I guess. I hope. Anyway, what I mean is unbiased and objective is what I'm trying to say. The second is, I've already touched on, acceptance of what is seen. So we accept what occurs, whatever the experience we have is in the present moment. Whatever that is, we accept that. We don't have ill will towards what we're doing. We just accept whatever occurs to us, even if it's a pain, we don't reject things, we don't push them away, and we don't pull them forwards, right? And that's really the two hindrances. The two main hindrances are desire, which pulls things towards you, and ill will, which pushes things away. So it's the same kind of thing. But what the sati does, what the mindfulness, the present moment awareness does, is just see things, you know, just like the peripheral vision, purely, pure seeing. And so you see, and all the thoughts, feelings, sensations, and so forth are equal, on an equal plane. They just are things that are occurring, phenomena. Okay, another term, sati, is called bare attention, sometimes bare awareness. It's non-conceptual awareness, no words, thoughts, ideas, and memories. It precedes thought. And an example is, say, a memory may occur to you in your mind, and then the next step is that there's an awareness almost immediately there's an awareness of the memory. And there may be a lag, it may be you're thinking about something else, but a memory occurs to you and then you become aware of it. That awareness is the present moment awareness. However, if it goes on and then you start thinking in words about the memory, and you start analyzing it and judging it and assigning different words to it, then you've gone beyond present moment awareness into thinking about it, into talking about it. So what we want is just the pure awareness in the present moment. Okay? And I got this next sentence out of a book by Bhante Gunaratana. I believe that's where it came from. Present moment awareness, it rides the crest of the ongoing wave of time, and it's the eternal present moment. The present moment is always there. We're not in it necessarily, but there is a present moment. If we can be in it, then we're in an eternal moment, because as you can imagine the crest of a wave going, the crest is always there as it flows through time. It rides the crest of the ongoing wave of time. Alright? If that doesn't do anything for you, that's okay. I just happen to like it. Okay. Impersonal. Okay, mindfulness sees phenomena without concepts of I, me, and mine. This is really important. You notice sensation, but without thinking, for example, you have a pain and you say, oh, I have a pain, that's a pain in my leg. This is all I mean mind thinking. You just want, all that you want to have is the pure awareness of a pain. It's just a pain. It's not my pain. It's not mine. I know that may sound foreign somehow or impossible, but it is possible. Or you hear a sound, you hear a sound out there, a car, you know it's not you, but you may say, I hear, it's my hearing. You may assign yourself to it, but generally it's impersonal. You try to step away from I, me, mind thinking. Okay, awareness of change. Mindfulness sees the arising and passing away of all inner and outer phenomena. The rising and passing away of all inner and outer phenomena. It's our own inner laboratory reflecting the world, the change, birth, maturation, death, and decay of all phenomena. This is something that can be seen with present moment awareness. This is one of the qualities it has. The rising and passing away of all phenomena, inner and outer. Okay, another attribute is participatory observation. So this isn't just an unfeeling kind of intellectual observation in which we have no reactions to. We're both a participant, the meditator is both a participant and an observer at the same time. So the mindfulness is aware of the person's feelings or emotions and observes how the experience makes that person feel. There again, without saying I or me, hopefully, that may not be so easy at the beginning, but this is the aim, to pull away from the I quality and to just see it as a feeling, as I explained already. So the meditator examines the inner self objectively, and so your experience of life becomes awake and full. Awake in the present moment and full, because you see not only the inner but the outer. As I said, both an observer and a participant. Okay, now another thing is, I go on to the three fundamental activities of mindfulness. How are we doing? Okay. Three fundamental activities. It's a reminding factor for aim. It sees things, two, it sees things as they are now. And three, it sees the true nature of all phenomena, ultimately. I wouldn't say, like, you can't sit down and start meditating and see the true nature of phenomena. I'm not saying that, but ultimately, that's one of its qualities. This is, as I said, the present moment awareness is at the very beginning of your meditation, and it goes all the way through to the deepest jhana. And it only gets stronger and stronger. So let me go back. Okay, when I say aim, a reminding factor, it reminds us of our aim, our memory, or sati. Sati is memory. That's one of its meanings. Of present moment awareness or memory. They're both, that's what sati means in Pali. So focusing on one object, so it reminds us to continue focusing on one object when we're meditating, or maintaining a bare, another way you can do it is a bare awareness of whatever is going on in your body mind. If you're using that, that's like more of a Vipassana type of meditation object. And what I'm saying is, rather than breathing, it's something that is occurring, the mind state or the feelings or whatever. Now, if we're stuck in thought patterns, return to the meditation object. And the sati reminds us to do that. The breath, in this case, it's the breath and the awareness of the present moment. And you know what you notice is that you have not been noticing up to that point. And the sati kicks in and says, go back to the meditation object. You know, it's that little boy with the long stick who taps the cows on one side and then on the other. All right? Now, next, sees things as they are. What does that mean? You notice things as they are, one after the other. You don't add or subtract, and you don't distort. You don't have preferences, and you don't make commentaries. I don't know if you heard the story that Ajahn Brahm tells. I told it once. It has to do with the monk, the Zen monk, who always said, ah, so, and various things happened to him. And his reaction, whether they were good or bad, was, ah, so. Without hearing the story, I guess that doesn't mean much, but you can imagine outrageous things, like he was accused of fathering a child. And when they came to his cabin and they presented him with the child, he said, ah, so, and brought up this child. Wasn't his, but he said, ah, so, and took over that without making any comments. And then when they realized who that the girl finally confessed and said that it wasn't the monk, they went back to his hut and they apologized and they said, well, we'll take the child back now. And he said, ah, so. And so that was his non-reaction to everything. See, that's what I'm trying to get at, this kind of acceptance of whatever is. Okay, deep mindfulness. The next thing is the true nature of everything. The true nature is usually in Buddhism, in the Dhamma, which is the teachings of the truth. It's usually the three characteristics: impermanence, suffering, and non-self. Those are the three characteristics. As far as the first one goes, impermanence, I already said, you see the origin and the passing, the origin, growth, and passing of all phenomena inside you and outside you, seen in real time. And my favorite simile of that is a geyser. You know, in the U.S., I don't know if you have a geyser in this country that's natural. We have a geyser in the United States called the Old Faithful, and every 60 minutes it goes off. Well, what I mean, in other words, that geyser isn't important in itself, but a geyser shoots up. It could be artificial or natural. And the inner, and from a distance, if it's quite big, a child or an animal might think it's a real object. You know, it looks like a column. It could be solid. They don't know. You know, it's sort of wavering there. But inside of it are all the droplets, so millions and billions of droplets that are shooting up. But on the outside of it are all the droplets that are falling down at the same time. So you've got the arising and passing of phenomena. This is a simile of that in real time. You've got everything arising, all these droplets arising, and all the previous droplets falling at the same time, constantly. This is what reality is. So that's my simile of that. All right. Okay, as far as suffering goes, and just about make it. He sees that all conditioned things, being transitory, as I just explained, they're all transitory. All conditioned things arise and fall. Being transitory, they cannot provide lasting happiness, and this results in suffering and unsatisfactoriness. Suffering is a big dukkha, as they say, is one of the big teachings. Dukkha. Unsatisfactoriness of life, of all things. Okay, and then these are the true nature, the three true natures of everything, and these are the insights that people get when they are in jhana. They see it more deeply than we usually do, and not always in jhana. It doesn't have to be, but usually you have to get a very deep meditation to have these insights, and then that becomes your wisdom, panya. That becomes panya. That is panya. If you see these things, you have wisdom, because you know the truth of them by your own experience, not by reading about them, right? So that's wisdom. That's what wisdom is. Okay, see, the last one is very important. Sees the non-self nature of all beings, of all phenomena. So all phenomena are not self, including ourselves. But this is something that to be really seen, you have to meditate, and you have to have an insight into it. And one insight you might have is that you suddenly see that you're acting. This isn't me, I'm just acting. What's going on? Okay. Well, we conceptualize beings as permanent entities, which are only processes flowing through time, like the Buddha used fire as an example. He says, you know, from one life to another, it's not the same self. There is no same self. There is no self. It's like one fire and then another fire. They're not the same fire. Okay, that's the end. I hope that everybody will continue meditating, and thank you for your attention. Thank you for not walking out. So I just have to pack up and go, right? Is there anything else?
No, that's it. Yeah, thank you.
All right.